le padukula bhushana sraganda tambula sudasavadivi prasaditatmo pasasara matavam
prasaditatmo
Sabridalilotsmita vibramekshitai
Sabridalilotsmita vibramekshitai
Shi Trivakra
Majjana
By bathing
Alepa
Anointing
Dukula
Dressing in fine garments.
Bhushana.
With ornaments. Srak.
Garments.
Ganta.
Perfume.
Tambula.
Betel
nut. Sudha asava. Drinking fragrant liquor. Adibi, and so on. Prasudita, prepared. Atma, her body. Upasasara, she approached. Matavam, Lord Krishna. Savridda, shy. Lila, playful. Utsmita, of her smiles. Vibrama,
exhibiting the allurement.
Ikshitai, with glances. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Trivakra prepared herself by bathing, anointing her body, and dressing in fine garments, by putting on jewelry, garlands, and perfume, and also by chewing betel nut, drinking fragrant liquor, and so on. She then approached Lord Madhava with shy, playful smiles and coquettish glances. Coquettish. Translation responsibly. Trivakra prepared herself by bathing,
anointing her body,
and dressing in fine garments, by putting on jewelry,
garlands and perfume,
and also by chewing betel nut,
drinking fragrant liquor,
and so on. She then approached Lord Madhava
with shy, playful smiles
and coquettish glances. Purport. It is clear from this verse that the ways a woman prepares herself for sexual enjoyment have not changed in thousands of years. Omagyan timarandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadati swa padantikam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha Petitana, Bhavanebhyo, Vaishna, Bebhyo Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadha, Sri Vasadi, Gaura, Bhakti Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So as we mentioned the other day in the class we gave on Monday, we said that Trivakra, or Kubja, she, from this pastime, we learn negative things and also positive things. like that. Because the positive side of this pastime is that she approached Krishna. And that is the duty of every living entity, to approach Krishna. Right? Because every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Every living entity is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Because every living entity is Prakriti. Prakriti means
that which is enjoyed.
That which is enjoyed. Yep.
Feminine.
Feminine. Yeah. It's a feminine term, right? That which is enjoyed. Prakriti is the energy of Krishna, like that. And the energy is meant to be enjoyed by the energetic. Right? So therefore, every living entity is considered to be Prakriti. Right? But then what happens is that the living entity, in contact with the false ego and the material nature, then he takes on what is called Purusha Bhav. Right? What is the Purusha Bhav? Enjoying mentality, right? It means the bhav, or the feeling. Bhav means a feeling, like that. It means the feeling that I am the enjoyer. Right? So this is the false ego of the living entity within the material world. Everyone thinks that they are the enjoyer. Right? And regardless of whether one has a female body and mind and false ego, or one has a male body and mind and false ego, regardless of what you have, still we are all affected by this Purusha Bhav. It means we want to be the enjoyer, or separate from Krishna. Our enjoyment will be separate from Krishna. I was reading yesterday, and just trying to think, it was Prabhupada who said it. Might have been Prabhupada, it might have been maybe Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Either Prabhupada said it, or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, or one of the Acharyas said it, like that. But they said to want to enjoy separately from Krishna is false. Right? That is called maya. Right? Maya means illusion, that which is not. So the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna is
illusion.
It's illusion. Right? It cannot happen. You cannot enjoy separately from Krishna. Right, whatever you experience is just superficial happiness based on the superficial covering of the subtle body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and the gross body. Right? You're experiencing some sukha, right? Some what you call happiness. You think, yes, I am happy in this material world. But actually, you cannot enjoy separate from Krishna, because it is not ananda, right? It is not bliss. Right? It cannot be compared to the satisfaction from serving Krishna. So whatever anyone thinks they are enjoying separate from Krishna is actually false. And then Prabhupada, or the Acharyas, pointed out, I can't remember where I read it, but they said that if you are serving Krishna, just like the gopis are serving Krishna, and if you receive happiness during that service to Krishna, then there is no fault in that. There's nothing wrong with that. Devotees are naturally happy. Why are devotees happy?
Free from desire.
What was that, a bit of approval?
Free from desire.
They're free, that's true. They're free from desire. Yeah, that's true. That's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta. Right? Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta. Shanta means peaceful. A devotee is naturally peaceful because he is Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, means he doesn't have material desires. Right? But the bhukti, the mukti, and the siddhi, in other words, one who tries to be a material enjoyer, one who tries to be a yogi, or one who tries to be a jnani, right? Sakale ashanta. They can never be peaceful. They can never be truly happy. Because all that they're dealing with is their mind and body. And through the mind and body you can only get sukha, you can only get material happiness. But you cannot receive ananda or bliss like that. So what was the question I asked?
Why are devotees happy?
Okay, good. Why are devotees happy? Yeah, we're connected to Krishna.
Get in the way with the world in Krishna consciousness, and the one you know has
That's true. That's good. Why else are devotees happy?
That's true.
Because we are properly situated as Prakriti and we serve Krishna as Purusha.
Yeah. That's our basic underpinning of our philosophy. That's true. Why else are we happy?
Kevalaya Mandakanda is the process of devotional service is simply blissful.
Simply blissful. That's good. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking of.
There's more pleasure in service than in service.
Yeah, there's more pleasure in service. So devotees are happy, right? One reason is because I think it was Prabhupada who said, even if Krishna is not God, still our lifestyle is better than the lifestyle of the non-devotees, right? Even if you take, I mean, Krishna is God, right? There's no question in our mind. But even if Krishna was not God, still the way we live our life is far superior, right? So naturally we're happy, right? Because our lives are much better, right? Our haircuts are better. Right, our clothes are better. Right, everything is better about our life. Our food is definitely better. Look where we live. You know, who's got a room like this in Melbourne? No, very few people got rooms like this in Melbourne. Right, so the devotees, everything about their life is happy. All the everything that devotees do invokes happiness. It is just the culture of Krishna consciousness. Right? The Vedic lifestyle and the culture, everything connected to Krishna makes the devotee happy. So naturally, as Prabhupada points out, when you serve the king, if you are living in the king's palace and you are one of the king's servants, naturally you get to enjoy all the facilities that the king also enjoys. But the point is that you never try to enjoy them before the king. Right? We never try to enjoy the food or the bhoga before it is offered to Krishna. Right? It must be offered to Krishna, it is for his pleasure. Actually, devotees should not even think, when the bhoga is being offered, to say if you're cooking in the kitchen, if you're one of the cooks, or if you're one of the devotees who do the, what do they call it? The other services in the kitchen when they cut up the fruits and everything.
The cut up,
yeah. Doing the cut up, right? Or dividing the plate like that, cleaning the plate, is that what they call it?
Breakfast divider,
right? So if you're the cook or if you're the breakfast divider, you don't look at the offering before it goes on the altar to be enjoyed by Krishna. You don't think, oh, that looks nice, that looks nice, that looks nice, right? Krishna is very powerful, so it should only take him 15 minutes to honour this and then I can enjoy it, right? Even that mentality is incorrect, right? Devotees have to be very careful of the subtle desire for enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, be very careful that the spirit, he said this in the very beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, he said, be very careful that the spirit of sense gratification does not enter in the name of Krishna consciousness. And we see in our movement, the history of our movement in the last, say, 30 years or so, that whenever the devotees, the spirit of sense enjoyment entered in the name of Krishna consciousness, it caused them to fall down. Right, they lost all their spiritual potency. Right, that. Because it appeared like it was Krishna consciousness, but actually subtly the mood was, I am the enjoyer before Krishna. And whenever that mood comes, that I am the enjoyer before Krishna, you will fall down. Right? To some degree. Right? You may even fall down completely, leave devotional service completely. Right? But you will fall down in your consciousness. So therefore you have to be very careful of that spirit. Right? So therefore, Madhavendra Puri, one time, he was travelling from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri, and he went through, what is that town called? Where Shirachara Gopinath is?
Remuna.
He passed through Remuna, right, on the way to, remember when we went on the train from Calcutta to Puri? We passed through Remuna, just maybe half an hour before Jagannath Puri, and that's where this deity of Shirachara Gopinath is. And he is famous all over India for his sweet rice. His kheer, like that they offer to the deity. It is famous all over India. It is said to be ecstatic, like that. So they offer this sweet rice to the deity. So Madhavendra Puri thought, when he arrived in Remuna, he thought, if I could learn what the ingredients are that they use to make this sweet rice, then I could make it for my deity of Gopal when I get back to Govardhan in Vrindavan. But then he chastised his mind, and he said, you are just a sense enjoyer. You're even thinking of enjoying before Krishna enjoys. He wasn't actually thinking like that, but he caught his mind to teach us a lesson. What we, because sometimes we think like that. So then, in the middle of the night, the Pujari had a dream. And the deity came to the Pujari in the dream and he said, go and find Madhavendra Puri. He is in the marketplace. He is sleeping in the marketplace. He just took rest under some on the front of someone's shop or something in the market. They said, go and find him and give him this pot of sweet rice which I've kept behind my altar. And the Pujari, he woke up after the dream. It was such a vivid dream. And he took bath and he went into the deity room and he went behind the altar and there was a pot of kheer, of sweet rice, waiting there. So he took the pot of sweet rice and then he went out into the market and he was calling out in the middle of the night, he's calling out, Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri. And then Madhavendra Puri woke up and then he came and he said, the deity has saved this pot of sweet rice for you. And Madhavendra Puri was amazed. Right? And then he took the sweet rice and then he tasted it, it was like nectar. And then he understood what the ingredients were, so then he could offer it to his deity of Gopal. But the point is, he did not think that he was enjoying before Krishna. That mentality should never come into our consciousness. And that is the mentality or the consciousness that we have to destroy in order to go back into the spiritual world. We have to give up this Purusha Bhav or this feeling that I will enjoy before Krishna enjoys. Right? Because that's what, even subtly, right? Because grossly we don't do it. Grossly we offer everything to Krishna before it is enjoyed by us. But in the mind, right, it has to, that desire has to be destroyed. It has to be purified. And everything has to be offered to Krishna for his pleasure. Like that. So we're learning from this pastime with Trivakra, with Kubja, two important lessons. Right? One is a negative lesson, not to approach Krishna with a material enjoying spirit. Right? But on the other hand, that even if you have a material enjoying spirit, still you should approach Krishna. Akama sava kamo ba moksha kama udharati tivrena bhakti yojena yajeta purusham param. Regardless of what you have in your heart, you should approach Krishna. Because Krishna, as we said the other day, he is all powerful and he is all purifying and he is all pure. So regardless of your motivation when you approach Krishna, you will get a positive result. That is how auspicious Krishna is. So here, she approaches Krishna for sex life, for sexual enjoyment. Now, sex life is the binding principle in the material world, as we discussed the other day. It is the factor, at least in the lower half of the universe. There are planets in the universe, the higher planets, where people are not affected by sex desire. The Jnanis and Tapaloka, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Satchaloka. But below Swagaloka, from the demigods down, everyone is completely controlled by sex desire. It is the principle which governs and controls everyone, and it is the principle which binds everyone in the material world. It is described as like being in a cage with golden bars. Right? You might think, people think, because of sex life, because sex life is what keeps everyone in this material world. Everyone's in this material world and they think, no, it is okay being in this material world. It is okay to work so hard and to suffer so much in this material world because I have a little bit of sex life to enjoy. So, this is described just like being in a cage with the golden bars. You're in a cage, right? You're in a prison, right? How can you enjoy? What's the difference if the bars are made from gold or iron? Right? That's irrelevant. But people think, no, it's okay, I may be in prison, but that's okay because I have sexual satisfaction. Right? So this is the binding element within this material world. Now this sex life, as Sri Yuga Prabhu was saying yesterday, this sex life is both subtle and gross. And it is true, Sri Yuga was making that point yesterday, that basically the subtle sex life is more powerful than the gross sex life. It is the subtle desire to control and to be the Lord which is more powerful than the gross sex life. But even still, men are very attached to gross sex life. Right? Men are very attached to the gross act of sex. Whereas women are more attached to the subtle sex life, to what the subtle, what it subtly brings. Like that. It brings affection, it brings protection from the man, it brings material facility from the man. So therefore they become attached to the subtle side, whereas the men are very attached to the gross side also. So This is the binding principle within this material world. Now, within the nectar of instruction, in the first verse, what is the first verse of the Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction? Vacho Vegam? Manasakrota Vegam? Jiva Vegam? Udara Pasta Vegam? Etan Vegam? Yovishaheta Dira? Savam Apimam? Pritivim Sashishat? So, these Vegams, these urges, or these pushings are very difficult to control, right? But Rupa Goswami points out, if you cannot learn to control these six urges in the beginning of spiritual life, it'll be very difficult for you to make progress in spiritual life, and you will never achieve the goal, factually speaking. In Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami gives 11 verses, and he goes from the very beginning of spiritual life to the very final destination of spiritual life. Right? Devotional service in Radha Kund. Right? In 11 verses, he goes from the very beginning to the very beginning stages to the most advanced stages of spiritual life. So this first point that he makes in the first verse, that one must control one's urges, this is the beginning of spiritual life. And if one cannot control the urges, then one cannot make further progress in spiritual life. It is not possible. Right? One must have control of these six basic urges. Now, Prabhupada points out in the purport, you can only truly get control of these six urges if you engage those urges in Krishna's service. Right? So, what is the first urge? That we are given. Vacho vegam. It means you have to learn to speak about Krishna or topics related to Krishna. Right? It has to be either Krishna or topics related to Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Right? You'll see that the tendency of the conditioned soul is to speak all sorts of things which are not connected to Krishna. They have no connection to Krishna. And you see, even amongst devotees, quite often devotees, they get together and they socialize, but when they socialize, they tend to speak about topics which are not directly related to Krishna. Right? And how does it make the heart feel at the end of the exchange? If the topic's not related to Krishna, then how do you feel at the end? How do you feel, Gaurav?
Dissatisfied.
You feel like empty, right? You feel like there's a dissatisfaction within the heart, like that. So therefore, it is necessary for devotees to learn to speak about Krishna, right? To have topics about Krishna. And that's why we have Bhagavatam class, right? Because then we hear and we chant about Krishna, right? And by attending classes, right, on Shastra, classes on Shastra, then what it does, it gives us a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then when you're outside of the classes, right, then you can naturally learn to speak to devotees about topics related to Krishna, right? Just like, because we're doing our study course, we're doing the Bhakti Vaibhav course, and we're just beginning the third canto of the Bhagavatam. So we have so much to talk about Krishna. And whenever I meet devotees who are going to the course, generally we talk about spiritual things. Right? And then quite often when devotees are not hearing and chanting enough, right, when devotees are not attending classes regularly enough and not hearing enough Krishna Katha, then their association outside of Shastric discourses tends to be very mundane topics, and that's not really what devotees are meant to speak about. Right? It's not very satisfying. That kind of association is not very enlivening for devotees, like that. And everyone's consciousness goes down into the material world. It's not so satisfying. So devotees are more inclined to speak about Krishna. So this is how to control the urge of the tongue. Speak about Krishna or topics related to Krishna. Prabhupada points out in the purports that Krishna and everything related to Krishna is non-different. Right? In one sense, it is Krishna. Achintya, Beda, Beda Tattva. It is Krishna, but it is also simultaneously different from Krishna. So what is the next urge?
Mind.
Right? Manasa, Krota. Right? Where does Krota come from? What does Krota mean? Anger. Where does anger come from?
Lust.
What's that? Desire, yeah, unsatisfied desire. And where desire is kept? In the heart, in the mind, which is non-different from the heart. Like that. So your desires are kept within your mind. And when your desires are not fulfilled, then what happens? You become frustrated, and that is anger. So manasa krodha, right? So when the mind becomes peaceful, as we said before, by being fully engaged in thought of Krishna, right? Either directly thinking about Krishna, or absorbing itself in service to Krishna, thoughts of service to Krishna, which is non-different, then one's mind becomes very peaceful. And when one's mind is peaceful, then anger is automatically controlled. Right? Anger can be used by the devotee, but it is always controlled. That's the point. Right? We can become angry, right? But that anger is always under our control. Right? It should be under the control of the devotee. If the devotee becomes angry at any time, that is only because he needs to remove an obstacle in Krishna's service. Like sometimes you have to become angry in order to remove something, which is stopping, impeding Krishna's service, like that. But otherwise, devotees do not become angry. Only if Krishna or Krishna's devotees are being belittled, then the devotee may become angry. He may use the anger. But otherwise, the anger is under control. There's no need to become angry like that. And then you have the next three urges. What are the next three urges called? The tongue, the belly, and the genitals. Right? Now these three are connected, right? And Prabhupada points out because they are in a straight line, right? They are connected, right? Whatever you do with the tongue will affect the belly, and what you do with the belly will affect the genitals. Right? That is because they are connected. Devotees must understand this principle, right, in spiritual life. You have to learn to control your tongue. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out when we sing Sharirara Bijajara in the morning, just like, you know, when we go up to Prasadam, do they still sing the song and everyone goes up? Yeah? While everyone's running around and Prasadam's, it's not very well organized, the serving out of Prasadam. The way it should be in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the devotees take the prasadam up together. The devotees who are going to sit down, the majority of devotees, they sit down, right? And then the devotees who will serve, then they serve out the devotees, right, very nicely. Quite often you go out there, it's totally all over the place, like that, if it's even got up to the kitchen, up to the prasadam hall. Half the time there's about, you know, 9 or 10 devotees kind of up the stairs and around the back and everything. It's not very good. It's not a very good program. It's not Vaishnava etiquette or culture. And especially often you see devotees walking around, just kind of eating prasadam or standing around. It's an offence to prasadam if you don't sit when honouring prasadam. Right? To stand and honour prasadam, or to walk around while honouring prasadam, that is offensive. It is aparad to prasadam. It's not respecting Krishna's remnants. And to have your shoes on while honouring prasadam is also aparad. It's offensive. Because I know devotees do that. I see devotees walking around the place eating. It's not very good. It's not a good standard. Prasadam should be honoured, right? Because it is Krishna's prasadam. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the tongue is the most difficult to control of all the senses, and actually it's a fact. If you can control the tongue, all the other five urges will become possible to control. But if you cannot control that one urge of controlling your tongue, right, then it will be very difficult for you to control the other urges. It has to be learned to control. So what does it mean to control the tongue? What does it mean?
Only take prasadam.
Only take prasadam. Right? That's the most important principle. Control of the tongue. Right? And you'll see the grihasthas, right? Because the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis, there should be no such thing as taking something not offered to Krishna. You'll see sometimes the grihasthas, they become less strict in this department. And then they lose control of their tongue and they begin to eat things which are not first offered to Krishna. And they begin to do it habitually. Or they even begin to do it far too often and irregularly. And they actually lose control of their tongue. And when you lose control of your tongue, because the other urges are then very difficult to control, then your mind becomes very difficult to control. And you'll see devotees who do not have control of their tongue, their minds are very like that. Actually, it says, I think in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you eat grains which are cooked by non-devotees, your mind becomes wicked. right? Because their consciousness has gone into the grains, and then you eat what's in their consciousness, and your mind becomes disturbed. Therefore, it is most important, it's a very important service. If you're a cook for the devotees, it's very important that your consciousness is purified. Because if your consciousness is not pure, whatever you're thinking goes into the food, and then everyone becomes disturbed within the temple. Even. I remember when I was in Adelaide Temple back in about 1991, and the devotee who was cooking a lot of the time for the devotees, he wasn't following the regulative principle strictly, we found out later on. And I noticed, because I'd been in the Melbourne Temple for a few years, and they sent me over to the Adelaide Temple to help out, and I noticed that my mind started becoming disturbed by lusty desires and so forth. And I was thinking, why is this happening? I'm doing everything the same as I was doing in Melbourne. And then later on we understood that this devotee was not following the regulative principles properly himself, and therefore it was affecting the consciousness of others. Right? So it's such an important principle. What else does it mean to control the tongue? No, we already did that. That's different. This one's specifically about eating. Like that, so. Say it again. Eat regularly, right? Yes. Yeah, to have simple prasad, that's good.
Not eating too much, not eating too little.
Not eating too much and not eating too little. That's very good. Yeah.
Eating things that are like goodness for each person, what is healthy for them may be different. So eating which is suitable for your own body may still be prasad, therefore still be like goodness in a sense.
Hmm.
But it may not be good for you, and therefore it's for you as part of your own business.
That's good. That's nice. Yes. I can't hear you. That's true, but we're speaking specifically about the principle of eating like that. So it means to regulate the eating. It means you eat the same amounts at the same times every day. Right? That is regulate. You see, Prabhupada would eat the same time every day. Right? Although he was travelling around the world, he'd eat at the same time every day and the same amount every day. That is control of the tongue. And if you can learn to do that, and like as Adrian Prabhu said, if you can learn to do that and eat food which is not too rich, not too heavy, right? It is more simple, right? More in the mode of goodness, right? Well cooked, cooked in the right consciousness, cooked in a clean kitchen and so forth. Then if you eat the same amount at the same times every day, your consciousness will become, you'll get control of your tongue, and your mind will also gradually become peaceful. Especially devotees have to be very careful about eating at night. Right? It's very disturbing to the consciousness. Like that. It says, like in India there is a saying, I don't know if it comes from Chanakya or where it comes from, but it says that one should eat like a king in the morning, a prince in the afternoon, and a pauper in the evening. Right? So it means in the morning you should have a good meal, like a king can eat a good meal. In the middle of the day you should have your main meal, like a prince. Prince is very, he has a lot of, the digestion is stronger. As the sun rises and then sets, when the sun gets to the zenith, or the highest point, that's when the digestion is strongest. Like that. So in the morning you can eat a good meal, then in the middle of the day sometime, in the afternoon you eat your main meal, and then like a pauper at night. At night you should not eat very much, if you eat anything. Like usually I just take milk at night. Right, that's sufficient. Maybe sometimes you'll eat more if you're doing Sankirtan or something, you need some strength. But at night you should eat very lightly. It should not be heavy. Because if you eat heavy, then in the night you will not rest properly. Right? And the mind will become very disturbed like that, especially by lust. And it'll be very difficult for you to control your mind and your senses. So then the tongue, the belly, right? Because if you don't get control of regulating, eating regulated amounts, then the belly eats too much. And then when the belly is full, it puts pressure on the genitals, right? Especially for men, right? And then lusty desires come, very powerful within the consciousness. And then it becomes very difficult to think about Krishna. Right? Sometimes you lose control of your tongue because there's nice prasad there. Right, nice opulent prasad. So you think, oh, I'll eat. Right? And then you eat more and more and more. And then you eat two buckets, right, of this nice prasad. You just eat and eat and eat. And then what takes place? right? Then your consciousness suddenly becomes, your belly becomes overfull, your genitals become agitated, and your mind becomes very disturbed. And it's very difficult to think of Krishna during those things. So therefore, we see that Kubja, Trivakra, she was approaching Krishna with lusty desires, right? Still contaminated. So we should not approach Krishna like that. We should try our best not to approach Krishna like that. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says in the very beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, in order to make your devotional service complete or strong, then, and in order to advance or progress in devotional service, you must get control of these urges in the beginning. And if you have control of the urges, then devotional service will be much easier in the long run, like that. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Well, she's not a pure devotee at this point. Okay. And it's part of civilizations for years gone by that people will take intoxication. Okay. At least in Vedic times, there was even intoxications in the mode of goodness. Like there was like honey wines and rice wines and things like that. They weren't as gross as what we have these days. And people would drink those things at the time of like when they were going to beget a child. Some of the lower classes may have taken intoxication at those kind of times. They would take intoxication at different times. Even in the Mahabharata, when the Pandavas they went into the house of Lak, and then the night that the house was set on fire, they organised a big reception, and many, many people came for the reception, and some sudras came. And there was some wine, not like the wine we have these days, but there was some honey wine or rice wine or something available. And they drank too much of it and they got drunk and then they took rest on the floor. And then when the fire was lit, the Pandavas all escaped through the tunnel. And the next day when everyone went through the ashes of the fire, they found the six bodies in the fire. And they thought, oh, the Pandavas have died, but actually it was the six sudras who had taken too much. So it was a part of the culture. Intoxication was a part of the culture. But the higher classes would not take it. The chhatriyas would not take it. Unless under very... The chhatriyas would take it, but it was very controlled. It was only very specific times and functions that they would take it. The brahmanas would not take it. But the sudras and the vaishyas would be more... they'd take it more regularly. It says that she's low class. It says that. She's from a lower class. It says in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says that she's a low class person. I mean, she's, sutra or... What was she doing? She was making sandalwood pulp for Kamsa. So yeah, like a sudra. Yeah, like a sudra. Like that. Any other question? No, she's... Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says she is part of the Bhu Shakti. So she's one of Krishna's... She's not Satchabhama. She's not one of the queens. But she is... She is a manifestation of Krishna's internal energy. You have to speak up, I can't.
And the internal energy can fall down
in the smaller dimensions. Yeah, I can't explain exactly. You can explain.
You just mentioned that she is partially essential of Satyabhama, but also in, if you look in the prediction of Prada Samhita explains about different personalities. And Kupcha's previous life, she was actually Suparnaka. She wanted to enjoy Lord Rama around the 8th party. And then again, she manifested this time. Because she was a humanist previously, that's why she had this plastic density.
In the previous life, she was Subhanaka. In Ram's pastimes, she was Subhanaka. And she took birth as Kubja. And where does it say she was partial expansion of Satyabhama?
In Bhagavatam, it explains partial expansion.
Where?
When Krishna enters into Mathura.
Oh, when Krishna enters Mathura. Okay, so it's mentioned.
But in Bhagavatamita, it's explained that she was Subhanaka.
Yeah. So in the previous life, she was Subhanaka. And then it says that she was a partial expansion of Satyabhama. So she's part of the internal potency. And then how she was mixed with this material lust, I can't say. Like that. It says that at the end, when Krishna comes to her house, and then Krishna enjoys with her, at that time she becomes purified of all her contamination. So I can't explain why. You know, there was some contamination there previously, but it does say she was part of Krishna's bull shakti, which means his internal potency. So I don't know if it was just a pastime or can't say.
I remember things you mentioned, also the matter of devotion. In the book of Goswami says actually Kupcha's love for Krishna is very, very high. Very high. But it's not as high as the gopis or this considered very high
enough
for Krishna,
Kamaya
Rupa or something.
Like that. Yeah, it's not considered pure.
It's not pure.
Rupa Goswami says that nectar in Bhakti Rasa Rajasa, it's not pure. He says that calm, the true calm is the lust of the gopis and the queens of Dwarka. And he specifically mentions Kubja. He says, but Kubja's love, it appears like the gopis and the queens, but it is not on that level. But then it says in this pastime, in these purports here, it says that she was not pure. There was some contamination. And then when Krishna came to her home and met her, then everything was cleansed and then she was pure. So I can't explain why she was part of the Bhu Shakti, but expansion of Satyabhama. But still, I can't explain it. But when we get to the spiritual world, we can ask. If we know someone from Mathura, we can ask. Yes?
In the pastime of Lord Rama eating fruits offered by Shibri, when Lord Rama visits Shibri, her devotee, his devotee in the forest, when he was traversing 40 years in the forest. So he visits one old lady who was waiting for Lord Rama and Lakshman to come to his place, and every day she used to clean the house and put flowers on the floor that Lord Rama will come. And she was doing it from many years, 10, 14 years. And because some rishi had told her that Lord Rama will one day come to his place, so she was preparing her house every day, irrespective of when Lord Rama will come. And when Lord Rama came, she offered her some fruits, and she tasted herself first that which were which are more tasty or which are good for, and then she threw away the other ones. So Lord Rama saw that the devotion in her offering, and he ate the remnants of the lady. So we as a devotees of Krishna, or Rama was also incarnation of Krishna, so we resisting others offering us prasadam, and sometimes people invite us to their places and offer us something, and it doesn't look good that we reject things by thinking that he may not be chanting, or he may not be following the regulatory principles. So how do we justify this thing?
Well, then you have to see the consciousness of the person. So you have to see, if someone invites you to their home to eat, you have to see what is their consciousness. And you have to see if it is, sufficient. I mean, if this person is doing activities which are not pure, that means their mind is not pure. If one does activities which are not pure, then the mind is not pure. So then, if you eat the food of that person which they have cooked, then your mind will also become contaminated. So then you have to see, what is the consciousness of the person? So you say the person is offering the food to Krishna, you're going to their house to have prasadam. Usually if someone is offering food to Krishna, if the food is prasad, then usually their consciousness is quite good. So then there should not be a problem. If someone's not following the principles and then he's offering the food to Krishna, then it's very, you know, I probably wouldn't go to that person's house. And, you know, if I knew that person was doing some very materialistic activities, then I probably wouldn't go to that person's house to eat. Like that. You can go to their house, but to eat, then that may be a different thing. So then you have to judge. Like that. Is that okay? Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.